This is an ENN special report. Now reporting.
Six.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
I'm one of the greatest broadcasters on planet Earth.
And I know that's hearsay here. It's
not hearsay, it's not heresy. Hearsay.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to ENN on this, a luxurious and lovely Tuesday evening in the tri-state. I'd like to start off by saying good evening to Michael.
Did you just drink milk, Don?
I'd like to say good evening to Don.
I'm currently caffeinating. Isn't that nice? That's a Stop and Shop cup I went and bought.
I'd like to say again, this time, good evening to Michael.
You know how hard it is to get hats?
And I'd also like to say good evening to Don.
Pick 'em!
Oh, we can say that every time there's a pick'em game. You know what I mean?
Pick'em.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I like that, yeah.
Is that not fantastic? What's the line?
Pick'em. I like that.
I did not get to mention my favorite Twitter account to hate. If there was someone I was gonna badmouth on Twitter, it would be Stephen Cohen. And Stephen A. Cohen, too, was back at it after Javi Baez's big 4-for-4 on Sunday. Steve Cohen tweeted, "Where are the Twitter experts complaining about Baez now? They must be away for the weekend." Really, dude? You really want to hang on the rim after one good night? Why not let the guys play speak for itself? I don't get it. I don't get the win there. I'm sorry, guys. I don't.
Also, you got to explain this to me. You got to help me out. I wanted so desperately to join in this conversation, but I didn't. But I'm going to take the opportunity here on the air to do so.
Please do.
Now, I was just going through Twitter, and I guess Mark Melusis from The Fan had a rant about Cohen and Twitter.
Yeah, so I'm glad you're bringing this up.
Okay.
He ripped Cohen.
So
okay.
He ripped
had enough
Steve
of
Cohen.
Him.
By the way, Mark Melusis sounds like a great guy.
He is.
He's
a friend of mine, and I don't talk to him that often, but that's not why I'm doing this. He tweet, and the FAN account said, "Mark Melusis is done with Steve Cohen's antics on social media. You're an owner of a team. Act it." And I agree. So the back and forth. So Steve Cohen tweets, like if somebody said, "I got to say, people get upset about the silliest things nowadays." And Steve
that
Cohen's
wasn't
response,
Steve. That was somebody else. Right?
No, that was somebody else. Right. And Steve Cohen's response to it was, "Or that they take everything I say literally." Kind of amusing. So what am I taking literally, Steve? So what you didn't mean the Baez tweet? Like all the things that you say, it's all just sarcasm. You really don't mean all the things that you say. I shouldn't take what you say on Twitter literally. So you don't have Baez's back. That you don't support the team. So what am I supposed to take literally and what am I not supposed to take literally? I found that very interesting because the guy doesn't shut up on social media. So I'm assuming you have Baez's back because that was the big tweet that Peter just mentioned. So, Peter, am I taking that tweet too literally?
Yeah, he's burying himself.
Right.
By saying that, he's saying, well, I think Baez is a bust. So either you meant it literally and you're rubbing the Met fan faces in it for booing Baez because he got off to a bad start, or you don't think Baez is that good and you're mocking the fact that he had one good game. Another thing, so yesterday I sat down, I had DVR'd the first episode of the continuation of the season of Billions. Now, I don't know Steve Cohen other than, you know, the interviews you read about him here and what he does on Twitter. He ain't Bobby Axelrod. There's no way Bobby Axelrod will do stuff like that. Oh. There's no way. Bobby Axelrod doesn't have that sarcastic gene in his body. He's just not that guy.
Right.
So I kind of believe when Brian Koppelman said I never even heard of the guy before. There's no way Axelrod is Cohen because Cohen is not nearly as cool as Axelrod.
He's not.
You heard Peter with the tweet about Baez. All right. Now he had another one that said we had them the whole way. That's after blowing the 9-0 lead or whatever.
That's
okay.
Funny.
That's fun. I get that. That probably falls into the category of
playful.
I'm taking it literally. But when he says there's a lot to like on how this team executed last night, good, solid, heads-up baseball, fun to watch. Another one, sometimes baseball could be pure joy. I'm so happy for the players. Glad to hear our players apologizing to the fans. Let's get behind our players today and go out and win, too. Are we taking those two literally? So all I'm asking, Steve, is are you just having fun with us? Is this all just kind of a game to you? You know, because that's what I'm starting to get the feeling of. All this thing about, oh, he's the character from Billions, and he was so cutthroat in Wall Street. Yeah, that's all stuff that's in his ballywick. But is this baseball thing to him just a toy, just to have some fun on Twitter?
Yeah,
that we're
it
not
is.
Supposed to we're not supposed to take what he says literally. When the people that follow him and the people that love him are all passionate about this team and take everything that happens seriously, and they don't want games to be played. So yeah, which one is it, Steve? Are you having fun with us, or you're being literal? Because you can't be both.
It's hard to keep up with. Let's stay with the Mets. Sandy Alderson talking about Jacob DeGrom having a strain. Let's hear from Sandy.
So a sprain is the lowest grade partial tear, if you will.
Right.
Okay. So at this point, the sprain has resolved itself. The elbow is at this point perfectly intact based on the MRIs and our clinical evaluation through our doctors. So that's just a technical term that the doctors have used. We don't use it routinely, but it's another term for a very mild ligament condition.
As I said earlier, I don't know how you resolve a tear unless you repair it. It wasn't repaired.
But if you're listening, he's talking about all the things around the tear.
Right,
sprain.
So you could build the area. That's what they did with Tanaka, Don. They built up the areas around the tear, so it gave it more stability. But you don't repair the tear.
Right. So everything around it is going to repair itself except the tear. So now it's just waiting for when that tear is going to happen. Is it going to be Tanaka and it never happened? Or is it going to be the next time he goes out there?
He goes on to explain a bit more. Let's hear more from Sandy.
Which ligament?
His right elbow. We're talking about UCL.
UCL, okay.
Yeah.
So we know partial tear of his UCL then.
Yeah, but look, somebody goes out with a headline that it's a partial tear.
Right.
That's what a bruise is. A bruise is a partial tear of the muscle, okay? So don't, you know, let's not go out there and you know, write as if this is anything new. It's not.
Sure.
Okay? And it's a very low-grade thing that has resolved itself.
I think he's playing the semantics game.
I mean, if he never said partial tear, and he just said it was a bruise, then that's fine. But as far as I know, and I did a deep dive on it when it happened with Tanaka, it doesn't resolve itself. You build up the area around it. You don't resolve it unless you repair it. It's not a regenerative thing, the ligament. It's weird that he went that route.
Now,
but again, the Mets just aren't on message a lot. They're not.
Now remind me, Michael, because it was such a long time ago. When they diagnosed Tanaka with the partial tear of his UCL, what led to that? What were some of the problems he had when he was diagnosed with that? Was he missing starts? Was he feeling pain? Do you remember what he was going through?
Yeah,
was it similar to DeGrom?
Yeah, he had to walk off the mound. He felt pain in the elbow. Now, DeGrom, you know, it's always very nebulous with him. You know, this part hurt, that, you know, he's gone on the IL three times and they keep saying there's nothing wrong with it. Now, remember, even when they examine him, we're not seeing anything. Everything is structurally sound. Well, if there's a tear in the UCL, you can't say it's structurally sound. So I maybe he misspoke, and I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but once there's a tear in the UCL, it doesn't resolve itself. But he felt pain there. They ran tests and they said he had a partial tear, and he had the choice of rehabbing and trying to pitch with it without surgery, or having surgery and missing the whole year. And he decided not to have surgery. And that seemed to be the right thing to do. But I will tell you this. I don't think he was ever the same as when he came over here. He found a different way to skin a cat. He got people out. But he wasn't the dominant pitcher that he was in Japan. And at the beginning, no, he wasn't. I'm sorry.
Well, see, that's a great point, Michael. Because this guy was throwing 11, 12 times a game, 100 miles per hour.
Right.
So is he going to have to reinvent himself and be less dominant to make sure that thing doesn't tear?
Wait, so hold on. A bruise is the same thing as a partial tear? Because I've definitely never heard that in all of my years hearing sports injuries discussed. Michael, where's your doctor friend who thinks Don looks like Honey Boo Boo's mom?
God.
I could text him. Why?
Because I've never heard that before.
I flush it.
A partial tear and a bruise. That's the same thing? I'm no medical doctor. I'm just a DJ. But that doesn't seem right to me.
That's what I'd like to know. Is a bruise of the UCL considered a partial tear? According to Sandy, it is. Maybe it is.
Speaking of injuries, this is an interesting take here from Jeff Saturday, who was on with Barton Hahn earlier. Let's listen to Jeff's take on Saquon Barkley.
I'm one of those guys. I'm not going to lie to you, man. Unless I know Saquon, because, I mean, what do you have? He's had one contact practice, and, again, we just talked about what a joke that is. At this point, I ain't playing him, man. I'm just telling you, I'm going to wait until I feel like my offensive line has gotten to the point where they can protect him well as Jones. But, man, you're basically betting your season on him. I mean, if he comes and gets banged up in week one, you know you're in trouble. To your point, Daniel Jones, he's got to make huge numbers this year. He's got to protect the football with he hasn't done. He has an offensive line that looked horrible in preseason, and the last thing you want to do is compound it by week one by rushing back, you know, your premier running back in the game. That, by the way, you put his second pick in the draft a few years ago. So, Gettleman's perspective, man, I mean, this is not positive. And they've tried to address the offensive line. Like, give them credit, man. Like, they continue to try for whatever reason. They keep striking out here.
No one likes the sound of that.
I would play him. I mean, you think the offensive line all of a sudden is going to become the Cowboys from 5 years ago? It is what it is.
Well, and also
it is what it is. So you can expose Daniel Jones to it and not Saquon Barkley?
Well, also, if you're going to wrap him in bubble wrap and save him for what? So are you going to give him a contract if he doesn't play this year or plays half the games? You got to see what you have here.
I mean, unless he's not able to go, they really think he's compromised.
No, every indication is that he'll be ready for opening day. What Jeff Saturday is saying is, do I want to throw a guy out there who hasn't played in almost a calendar year and hasn't had really any contact? So
you're saving him for the NFC Championship game?
Yeah, what am I saving him
That's
for?
That's what I, yeah.
I mean, I don't want to make it sound like these guys don't matter. I mean, they do. But he's a commodity that you're going to have to pay at the end of the year. You want to assess what you have. And I want to find out if this guy's going to be a help this team win. Plus, I got to figure out what I'm going to do with my quarterback. Jeff makes it seem like this is just, we could throw this year away and just protect everybody. There's jobs on the line. Gettleman's job, you would think, is on the line. Is Daniel Jones going to get a contract? Is Barkley going to get a contract? Where is this team going?
Do you guys want to hear from one of our favorite voices in all of sports?
Well, you've been hearing from me all day.
No, I meant someone we like.
Oh.
Joe Namath was on with Greeny. Let's get Broadway Joe's thoughts on the Jets this year.
I am excited, and that is a fact, man. I'm excited about this team, this coaching staff, the enthusiasm they have. You want to see every team's got some enthusiasm, but these guys are young. They know where they are. Saleh has, at this point, he's got these guys pretty darn ready.
Now, I don't want this to affect the way you feel about his enthusiasm, but I did learn after that interview that while he was recording, he did have the new Victoria's Secret catalog in his hand. So that
what's
could have affected his
you?
Mood.
Really? What's wrong with
Listen,
you?
Listen, this is Joe Namath.
Yeah, stop yourself.
If he wants to look at lingerie models, he makes a phone call and they parade in front of him.
Oh, my God.
Now, I'm not saying he would do that. Now, I'm not saying he would do that. But do you think this is a guy that's flipping through a magazine?
Hold on. So you're telling me that Joe Namath is the kind of guy that if he sat down at a counter to do an interview and he picked up the phone to call Don, Michael, and Peter and have himself a little chat, and when he sat down to have the chat, he moved a newspaper, and under the newspaper was the new Victoria's Secret catalog, he wouldn't enjoy that. He wouldn't flip the pages and enjoy it, Don? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying he'd be completely focused on the task at hand. But if he had a hankering
to see forget
some
it.
Models,
again,
he
can,
makes
can again,
I,
forget
can I,
it.
Can I just put a bow on this?
Yes.
Go ahead.
The life that Joe Namath has lived, a lingerie catalog is like an Archie comic to him.
You know,
that may be true, and you guys are definitely taking this joke that was meant to be one tiny quip and laugh seriously.
You've beaten it.
You've stomped on it. You've crushed it. I thought it was very funny.
You don't know the show.
Do you know the show? I had the first time you listened?
I'm not going to mention the person's name. He's somebody we all know.
Like?
Gave me some very, very good advice.
Okay.
And said, your life experience is all to build up a portfolio, right? So that when life gets tough or life gets boring, you close your eyes, you think back to your past, and that gets you through it. When your wife's screaming, take out the garbage, the kids are driving you crazy, you pull back the lazy boy and you think back to another time in your life. And that portfolio gets you through. Do you realize that Joe Namath's portfolio is War and Peace? At any moment, he can close his eyes and take back to some of the most greatest experiences anybody has ever been through in their life. He's got to go fumble through a newspaper with pictures of women in lingerie. Are you nuts?
If his portfolio was a song, it would be Inagata DeVita.
Absolutely. Epic. If it was a movie, it'd be the Godfather epic. Both movies combined into one. Like 7.5 hours.
Not three, though.
Or 10 if it's on AMC.
Now, sometimes your team doesn't perform at the level you want.
Is this one of your commercials you're reading right now?
And you're unhappy. Sometimes you're unhappy with your team's performance. Sort of like I was with how my team handled that joke for the last 2.5 years.
Damn it up!
But then there's Brian Kelly after Notre Dame's victory over Florida State this weekend. Let's hear from Brian Kelly.
I'm in favor of execution. Maybe our entire team needs to be executed after tonight. I mean, we just didn't execute very well.
I'm glad you brought this up, Peter.
Hold on. We'll get to you, kids. Here's Brian Kelly explaining his execution comment.
Oh, it's an old John McKay quote. I was kidding. It was tongue in cheek. It wasn't funny. It's an old John McKay quote that he used after the game. So I was talking and you know, making a joke about it. Why it was taken serious? Are you people crazy?
Oh, he's so right. People, lighten up. Everybody's looking to cancel everybody. They would love to run with this and get Brian Kelly fired. John McKay said, what do you think of your team's execution? He said, I'm in favor of it. Now, Brian Kelly delivered it like a clown.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're going to get mad at him about it? Like he really wants to execute his team? Everybody, pump the brakes and lighten up a little bit.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Michael. Seriously. The reason it wasn't funny is because he stumbled over it. He worded it wrong. He messed it up. But it was anybody that knows anything about football remembers fondly about that 76 quote from John McKay when they were an expansion team and they were 0-14, didn't win a game. It's classic. And now all of a sudden the Twitter police are going to make some kind of controversy out of it. We've got to learn to ignore these people, guys. It's ridiculous.
I was more upset with what Ed Orgeron said.
What did he say?
Yeah, he was walking into, you know, they're playing UCLA, and there was some UCLA fans ragging him, and he goes, yeah, you keep wearing your sissy blue. So UCLA won the game. I loved it. And then on their Twitter page, the banner on the top says sissy blue.
Midge.
That's dumb. That's just a stupid thing to say. But I wouldn't cancel him for it.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, but that's something that it was wrong to say.
Yes.
I thought we've gotten by those kind of silly things, but all Brian Kelly was doing was quoting a classic football quote that everybody thought was humorous at the time, and nobody would take it seriously. And the fact that he even had to bring it up in the post-game press conference, I'm glad he answered it that way.
That'll do it for ENN.
Wow. What?
Well,
gypped.
Well, you know what? We could do a little more on the flip side. How about that? You want to do some more on the flippity flop?
Why don't we do that? I think that's exciting.
All right, I got some good stuff from Rasheed, a quote about LeBron James from Rasheed Wallace.
Omaha!
A bizarre relationship between ESPN and Drake. Lots to do.
And how about Paul Pierce taking a shot at ESPN, too?
How about that?
No surprise there.
Yeah. Michael, K Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. So we come back with a little extra added ENN. Stick around and phone calls, too, at 1-800-919-3776. K, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
ENN continues on this Tuesday evening, and you're going, wait. Why is the K-Show still on? Well, that's because we're back to 3 to 7 every day, baby.
Oh, I thought there was like a tornado warning where Carl lived. Or...
No, Don, no. Now, you know me, and that means you know I was locked into college football this weekend.
I was, too.
Oh, I was
locked. I found myself, I found... Clemson, Georgia, compelling. I found I found Notre Dame, Florida State, compelling.
Absolutely.
Rutgers, Temple.
Andrew, question for you. When I started this conversation, Andrew, did you think I was serious or being sarcastic?
You are being 100% sarcastic.
Didn't see a play. I celebrated it. When Saturday ended, I pumped my fist and said, I made it another week without college football. Fugazi sport.
I got completely suckered by that.
I can't believe you believed
I can't believe it either, because the history shows I should have been more on my toes with that. I'm embarrassed.
You should. I actually chuckled when I saw that the Clemson-Georgia score was 10-3. I went, yep, that is exactly how I imagine a big SEC matchup going. And that's one of the reasons I'm not interested.
Can I say, actually, I found that refreshing. Same thing with Penn State-Wisconsin, 16-10. They were not
– I hear that.
They
I
were not
that.
Pretty games, but I've kind of gotten really sick of, like, 66-52 college football scores. And so I kind of enjoyed seeing some really big games played in a – kind of a more like human way.
Yeah, because it's just not a video game.
Like, but when I think of teams like Clemson or Georgia and the roles they play in their respective conferences, that is what I picture is 10-3. So to me, it's funny. But I also hear what you're saying, particularly when it comes to week one of college football, where you have games like Fordham's big showing, losing 52-7 to Nebraska.
A record was broken or tied in that game. Who was the linebacker? I don't know. I remember his name for Fordham that tied the record for tackles in a game. But
Greenhagen.
Wow. I am with you normally about college football. I'm not a fan. It's not usually a destination for me. Like, oh, there's a game tonight. I'm going to sit down and watch the whole thing. But I'm a football fan, and football is great. So sometimes I can get sucked in. So if I see a game that's competitive – or if I like what happened with really both the games, the Georgia Clemson and the Notre Dame and Florida State, where I turn 11 o'clock, as you know, I got to watch the news, and then they're midway through the fourth quarter, and I'll watch it, not because I'm waiting for the news, but I get sucked into a game that's competitive. I think they were down. Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong. Notre Dame was up 38-20 or something. And they came back and they tied the game. And listen, their overtime's fugazi and everything, but it's competition. And I don't know. There's a place in my life for it, but it's not high up on my list.
Listen, I agree. I have the days when I end up watching several college football games, and I come in and out. It's a Saturday night. I'm sitting around waiting for something else, and I end up catching a whole game. Or Maryland turns out to be good, by the way. Mm-hmm. Started off with a win over West Virginia. And our quarterback this year at Maryland is Tua's brother, who threw for 330 yards and 3 touchdowns. And have you seen Maryland's new permanent unis, Don?
Are these permanent?
I think they're permanent.
I got to look at them.
They're gorgeous. I thought it was the best Maryland fit I've ever seen. But I hear you. But when it comes to, like, week one, when I'm barely, like, I'm only focused on the return of pro football, and then a week earlier, 2 weeks earlier, you get college football. I'm just never there. Now, Andrew, how did Syracuse do this weekend?
They won on the road, beat Ohio 29-9, and now Syracuse hosts Rutgers next weekend.
Wow, big game. A lot of eyeballs on that. Were you dialed in?
I would have been, but I was not able to be near a TV at that point.
Was that the wedding?
Yeah.
So had you been
Or the rehearsal dinner the day before. Either way, yeah.
Well, you went to the rehearsal dinner as well?
Yeah, it was
you
a
were
big,
in the wedding.
Big wedding weekend.
Wait, how close are you with this person?
Very, I would say.
I don't even know him.
Well, that's all right.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it is all right. I think there's something going on here. Everyone knows this person, and you're so close that you were in the wedding, well, and I don't know him at all.
I wasn't in the wedding. I don't know that he really had a wedding party, but you weren't here when he was here, so that's
Look,
it.
There's a certain level of passion you have for college basketball to really be in that circle, Peter. If you think you're passionate about college basketball, you have a lot to learn.
Yeah, no, not relative to these people, these freaks. If you are wondering, Georgia, with their thrilling 10-3 victory over Clemson, has jumped to number 2 in the polls behind. Wait, you don't know the answer? You haven't watched college football for 7 years, but you have a guess. You were right. Alabama, number 1. Georgia, 2. Ohio State, 3. Oklahoma, 4. A&M, 5. Clemson now at 6. Cincinnati at 7. The Fighting Irish after their scare and win at 8. Iowa State at 9. And Iowa at 10. Okay. Let's jump ahead to this situation between ESPN and Drake. ESPN announced that they have an official relationship with Billboard's Artist of the Decade, Drake. And Drake will work with ESPN throughout the entire NFL season to curate music for select Monday Night Football games. Now, they believe that Drake encapsulates both the energy and mood of Monday Night games on ESPN.
Well, that's
awesome. I have a question for ESPN executives. Have you ever listened to Drake? How often does Drake encapsulate the mood of a football game? He encapsulates the mood of trying to have sex after the football game. It's just such an interesting fit to me. But this comes after Drake actually announced his Certified Lover Boy album date during a morning sports center a couple of weeks ago. We know that Drake is a huge football fan, a huge sports fan, I should say. So it makes sense.
No.
And Drake is there.
This is going to be I really shouldn't go there, but I'm going to do it. I guess can't help myself. Well, considering how much Disney Plus I watch, I think I've got a few bucks in the bank with this. Does somebody need to tell ESPN how popular football is? Why are we messing with Monday Night Football? Well, we got to have the Mannings on an extra channel. We've got to hire Drake. It's football. It's the one thing you don't have to mess with. All right, I understand the matchups sometimes are not the greatest in the world, and I know you have to have insurance policies for that, but am I wrong, Peter?
No, and even if you're not – here's the thing. Even if we're not, quote-unquote, messing with it, in my opinion, and I know the brass at ESPN takes Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg's opinions very seriously, in my humble opinion, it's just throwing money down the drain that you could spend elsewhere. Because you're right, Don, football could have a ketchup-stained wife beater,
right,
and a tank top with a big mustard stain right in the middle, slob, screaming, "Here comes football," and you're still going to get a 12 share.
I think we have a drop with what you described.
Yeah, it's the song that we believe should be the theme song to Monday Night Football, but they insist year after year on trying to roll out. In the past, they did things with they had music curated by Diplo and DJ Khaled. Now, I personally wouldn't allow Diplo to curate the music for my Thanksgiving dinner, but here's what I would do.
Here comes football.
Here comes football.
Here comes football.
Here comes football.
Now, what we're trying to accomplish there is that you're really, because of the expense of it, I wouldn't cost a dime. Like, why am I spending money on some kind of wacky open to draw eyeballs? I got a football game on, man. That's enough. So I understand that they can't flex on Monday night. So sometimes you might get a matchup that's not great. But if anything needs dressing up, Peter, it's probably Thursday, not Monday.
If they want to get wacky and start bringing eyeballs to football that they weren't getting before, you got to bring back Dennis Miller. We haven't seen a play like that since Lynn Miranda wrote in the Heights, but am I right?
Am I right? I just think sometimes we just get, it's football. We're good. You know, if you want to think outside the box for the new NHL package, if you want to think outside the box for some of those late college basketball games, whatever, I get it. But this is football.
Patrick Mahomes is wearing more eyeshadow than Tammy Faye Baker, but.
Football!
I'd like to say thank you to the seven people who grew up in a time where they truly appreciate the Dennis Miller jokes. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you. Guys, I had a tremendous sports experience this weekend. I watched a UFC fight on Saturday afternoon with a friend of Natalie. Follow this, Don. It's a friend of Natalie and Laura Stiles. They have a mutual friend. Got it?
Okay.
And her name's Mia. Mia's boyfriend was fighting in UFC on Saturday afternoon. Okay?
Okay.
Mia did not go to the fight. It was in Vegas with no crowd. I guess UFC pulled out on crowds because things are so bad right now in Las Vegas. So she watched the fight. Laura rented a private space, and we watched it together. Her boyfriend, Khalil Roundtree, had lost two fights consecutively. Okay, Don?
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain to you how UFC works. If you're not a big name and you've lost two fights in a row, you lose a third one, there's a good chance they're voiding your contract. You're not getting another fight.
Yes.
Okay,
that makes sense.
Do you understand the intensity of watching a fight with the partner of someone? Not only because of the professional part, which is smaller, but because of the fear of what could happen to your partner, it was truly one of the most intense sports experiences I've ever had in my life.
I can't imagine what that must have been like.
She was every range of emotion. She was crying before it started. And do you know how Khalil won the fight? With like a kick. I'm sure Ariel Helwani would have a much more poetic way of describing this, Don. But almost like a downward kick that broke the dude's thigh. He Ooh. Broke the dude's leg above the knee. It was a crazy 10 minutes. When you're watching with someone who's that invested, that five-minute round was the longest thing I've ever watched. It was terrifying. I was downright terrified.
Now,
but shout out to Khalil Roundtree. He did get the win.
Well, imagine if he was like your favorite fighter, there'd be like tense. But she's married to this. This is a relationship.
No, it's
where
her boyfriend.
Her career
yes.
could be over.
I know.
But also fearing that he's not the one that gets his thigh broken.
Exactly. That's why when he won, the celebration, I think, is just more relief that he's okay than
yes.
anything. It's a unique sport. Now, Rasheed Wallace appeared on the Million Dollars Worth of Game podcast. Was asked about how LeBron would have fared in Rasheed Wallace's quote-unquote era. Rasheed said, he probably would have done good with his physical stature, with him being bigger than the majority of players. So he probably would have held his own, but I don't think he would have been as successful as he is now. It's a whole different era back then. I couldn't necessarily say that he would have been a beast, but I think he would have held his own. Andrew, what stood out to me about this quote is that, like, Rasheed's career only started 6 years before LeBron's.
They're kind of the same era. I thought the same thing.
They're basically the same era.
Not entirely, but the majority, I would say, of Rasheed Wallace's career took place while LeBron was playing. So I found it very strange also.
They definitely played against each other in playoff games.
Yeah, it's almost like he's trying to take ownership of an era that he really wasn't in.
Yeah, I know. I was like, do you mean like the 90s? Like the late 80s, early 90s? Because you were definitely the late 90s, early 2000s. I mean, he played to like 2012. Paul Pierce talked about his relationship with ESPN falling apart. He said he hated the travel. He said that executives didn't think he was working hard enough and went on to say more with Sports Illustrated, including, I was done with them anyway. It wasn't a great fit. There's a lot of stuff over there you can't say, and you have to talk about LeBron all the time. Yo, I have to tell you, I've never seen someone more petty about their sports feud than Paul Pierce is with LeBron James. And lastly, guys, speaking of the NBA, got to send all the love out to Cedric Ceballos, the former NBA star, posted a picture and said, on my 10th day in the ICU, COVID-19 is officially kicking my butt. I'm asking all family, friends, prayer warriors, healers, for your prayers and well wishes for my recovery. If I have done anything to you in the past, allow me to publicly apologize. My fight is not done. Thanks.
Wow.
So, I mean, sending love out to a former NBA player, Cedric Ceballos, 10 days in the ICU. And that will do it for ENN. Officially. Let's make room for the big fella.
Big fella, Chris Carlin's coming up next. Take you up until 7 o'clock right here on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.